live and in color from the NBC News radio broadcasting studios of KCAA 102.3 FM, 1050 AM and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful sunny California. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone. Good afternoon. My name is Rob Starr. I'm along with Mr. Mike Barron, which we normally call Mr. Mikeypedia, and he's just making a quick stop to get some news out of the computer and should be here in a sec. Anyway, together we're known as Da Water Boys, so I hope everybody had a great week. It is a good week. It rained here, which is nice. We needed that, but you probably heard there's lots of floods and mud and people dying and people missing, and that's the bad part of that, because we had some fires up in Ventura County a couple weeks ago, major fires, and unfortunately it took away all the vegetation and nothing but mud came down, and it's kind of sad, and I know they're still looking for, I think, 8 people as of this afternoon that I heard. They made a mistake on the morning news. They reported 48 people missing. And then when they found out that was wrong, the news people got really angry and called back the public information officer and wanted to know what was happening. And anyway, they found that out. And so Mike's just walking in, got all the information from the news. If you want to call in and talk to us, please do. With any questions, you can call 888-909-1050 or 909-792-5222. And you can also watch us live on the website at kcaaradio.com, and we'll give you a little wave out there, and we'll be ready to go. So, Mike, how was your day today?
Well, it was pretty good. Pretty good, Rob. I'm just dealing with a little vocal issue, so hopefully the folks will
give you more depth.
My voice is, maybe it's changing. So who knows?
Are you going through puberty?
That's right. Intellectual puberty, maybe. Okay. But anyway, the I may have to excuse myself at any moment in time, but wow, there's a lot of news going on in California water.
Absolutely, and we have the right person who can tell us all that. The purveyor of Maven's Notebook, Miss Chris Austin. Chris, good afternoon.
Hey, good evening, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good. How's everything up at your end?
Hey, it's pretty good here. Thank God we weren't, over in Ventura County. Very bad things around Montecito.
Yep.
And talk about, those mudslides have also taken out the water system.
Yep.
And some major portions of it. So it's going to be a long time before even those that are still with the houses that are still standing are going to have, things like water, power. I mean, it's really ugly. So our prayers and thoughts go out to them out in Ventura County.
Absolutely. I heard a story that almost brought me to tears driving this morning. I guess as the fire people were going through the homes and police, the rescue people, they heard a faint cry, and it was a little baby under a year old, and it was stuck buried in the mud. Anyway, the baby's fine. I mean, they rescued it, but God, that's got to be scary, compacted in mud.
Oh yeah!
Can't
even imagine it.
And it's hard to contemplate sitting inside your house that you are not safe. I mean, you get it if there's a fire coming over the hill, but other than that, you feel pretty solid.
Why do people stay? They know they need to leave and they don't.
Yeah, I think it's just hard. Like I said, to
it's your home. It's your
sitting
home.
Inside your home, you are not safe.
Hope against hope, that you're hoping that maybe the reports are exaggerated and I was talking about this with my daughter who was visiting, and we were just talking, it's got to be so different when you're in the middle of it and you've got to make these decisions. Here we are, not under pressure, not listening to these reports directly, or being getting a knock on the door where the policeman or the fireman is coming in and saying, listen, there's a recommendation for voluntary,
Yeah.
But it's just amazing. And then you mentioned the destruction or huge damage of a water system. Is that just one city, or is it a larger region?
Oh, actually, it affected the South Coast Conduit, which takes water, I believe, into Santa Barbara, or access to Lake Cachuma. So that is taken out. So I don't believe that they can deliver state water project into Lake Katuma right now because the conduit's out. I'm not entirely, you know, I mean, don't. I don't know that for absolute, sir, but I know that they can't get water in and out of Lake Katuma. And Montecito, it's not a big city, but they had a couple reservoirs that were actually large tanks. And they got their, at the top of their distribution line got taken out, and all of their reservoirs drained.
Oh my gosh.
The pipes and distribution lines are gone now as well. So it's like that whole system is pretty much going to have to be rebuilt. But you can't engineer a system to survive a mudslide like that.
No, can you imagine in a couple of days when everything dries out, all that mud inside those tunnels are solid?
Oh, yes. Oh, but anyway, speaking of decisions and changes and stuff, it was a busy day yesterday in water.
Yes.
Wouldn't you know, we had a change at the top.
Leadership, yes.
Department of Water Resources. I happened to be sitting at my computer, and I got the first press release. The first one that came out was actually from Sonoma County Water Agency announcing that Grant Davis was returning as general manager.
Right.
And I sit on Sonoma County Water Agency's press release list, but not as much as of everybody else. So I actually had the honor of hitting Twitter first with the news.
Wow.
And delivering it at everybody's email box. And then about 10, 15 minutes later came the official announcement that Grant Davis was gone and Carla Navis was in. And all this at the same day when in the legislative hearing at the Capitol, they were discussing the Oroville crisis. And Grant Davis was actually supposed to be there in that hearing, and instead they send in the deputy director and didn't really give an explanation for his absence. And so then the timing was they finished up the hearing, and that's when all the press releases came out. So... yeah, it was definitely an interesting day.
Yeah.
Apparently, you know, Grant Davis was not, that there were some personality issues, I guess, with how the governor and people wanted things to run, excuse me, and what Grant Davis was wanting to do, from what I understand.
Well, Carla Nemeth, is that how you pronounce it, Nemeth or Namath, came from Natural Resources.
Yeah, and Carla's been around for a long time. I remember Carla back when I first started in like 2007, 2008, right when the Bay Delta Conservation Plan was starting. And boy, Carla went in to start selling that to the people in Stockton. You know, so you're going to go try to sell the idea of what is essentially a peripheral canal in Stockton. That's like those are fight words in Stockton. So I was really in awe that she had, you know, what it takes to go in and face a crowd like that. So she's, you know, she is not new to this. She's well versed in it all. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm not sure that the Department of Water Resources has ever been led by a woman. There have been women in staff, but this, I think, is the first time that the director will be a woman. So,
well, that's kind of exciting.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised, but I think it's great. You know, I think it's good. You read her work experience, and it's quite significant.
Oh,
and,
yeah, she's definitely qualified.
You know, definitely prepares her for. And, you know, the thing I found of interest was the creation of two new deputy directors out of one old job. And I don't know if you got into that detail or not, Chris, but one now there's a new position called the Deputy Director for Flood Management and Dam Safety. So there's a focus on those two critical areas. And
yes,
so I think that makes sense from a strategic management, you know, standpoint.
But the public got to realize it. Whoever they put in these positions, it's not an overnight fix.
Oh, you're right. You're right,
I mean,
Rob.
I mean, that's, you know, people think, oh, well, new team, new this is going to all happen. It doesn't happen that quick in government, unfortunately.
Yeah, but, you know, if the direction is correct in the development of the
Absolutely.
Consensus and, the you know, and you get the resources and that,
right.
you know, that leadership, those leadership skills are very, very, very important. And then the second position is the Deputy Director for Integrated Water Management and Multi-Benefit Programs. And really the focus is going to be on long-range planning. They wanted to really get some focus in terms of managing California's water resources in light of the impact that climate change is having on, you know, less snow, more rain. We rely on that snowpack to basically store a third of California's water needs every year. And when if that half of that goes away or more, you know, That's going to be a big issue.
You hire the water train and the cloud seeding company.
Well, you know what? There is a focus. You know, they've kind of come. You know, there's a lot of focus with groundwater management and recharging these aquifers and taking flood water and using flood waters to do that. And this is actually kind of new in terms of water management because. In a lot of cases, flood is managed by a different agency and in a different manner. The idea with floodwaters is to drain the city, drain it off the land, get it out as fast as possible so it doesn't damage people or property, you know. And that's, and now they want to take that water and they want to use that water to charge groundwater aquifers that are depleted, which is great. But we don't really have the infrastructure set up to carry that flood water to the place where it can sink into the aquifer and do some good. So we need to make some of those changes. We need some policy changes because we have to get now a lot of more agencies that aren't used to working together. You know, we need to get them working together now. You know, we're... Yeah, over there where you are, you have the great model in the Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority
yes.
where they have really taken people who were fighting and arguing.
Suing each other.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
They were suing
they
each
got,
other.
Yeah, and they got them to sit down and you know, play in the sandbox together. And they figured out, wow, we can do so much more. And they were actually one of the first to take this whole watershed approach. So... You know, they're very progressive, and it's a great model, and I think that a lot of people in the state are going to be looking to, you know, SAPA and similar projects, you know, to see how they can be implemented on a statewide basis. I think that, you know, where elevating integrated regional water management is kind of important.
I wish the rest of the country would operate the same way with governments. But speaking of that, I hear there's this panel I put together to discuss legal issues associated with water conservation mandates.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, it's interesting, this idea that if the state tells you that you have to cut water use and you have water rights, that say you can have a certain amount of water, and now the state is telling you have to cut your water use, is that considered a taking under, you know, constitutional law? You know, there are some interesting issues that are going to probably play out as we go through this, you know, because the legislature is considering about, make you know, how to make conservation a California way of life, and the way they're, you know, bottom line is they want residents to use less water in the urban setting, and they're going to put requirements on urban water agencies to make that happen. So the water agencies are going to be told there'll be a formula that they would calculate out down, you know, it's really down to figuring out residents. And, okay, you know, there's four people in that house, and they each get 55 gallons a day indoors, outdoors. Their lot is, you know, how many square feet, and it can be, you know, what percentage can be hardscape, what can be landscape, and then they get a score, and that's how much water they should be using. And the water districts are to calculate this all up, and they got to try and work towards reducing that water use in the community. And if they don't, then the water agency would get fined, possibly. I mean, there is an enforcement that would end, not fined right off the bat, but if you continue to not meet your target, you would eventually face fines.
You know, I'm as a private citizen, I'm all in favor of that. But I also would like to see the reverse, at least in California, where the legislation is spending money wildly on things that we don't need. And, you know, we don't get a say unless we go to vote for them, you know, every couple of years. And there's no ramifications for them unless you try to do recalls and things. I think fair is fair. I think that's a good idea what they should do, because we're trying to be able to survive into the future. You know, like San Bernardino, they've got enough water, I read yesterday, to 20,035 without doing anything, without adding any more.
Hopefully they had a good mathematician develop that forecast.
We hope so.
Well, you know, we're very fortunate here in Southern California in that our groundwater basins, for the most part, have been well managed, and they're not overdrafted. And in the Los Angeles area, Southern California area, down to San Diego, we do not have a critically overdrafted basin. Now, there are a few up in Ventura County, and there's one in Ridgecrest, but, you know, the urban population of Southern California, our groundwater has been excellently managed. And it's been adjudicated, of course, so the courts have gone in and said, you have to manage your groundwater.
Right.
But we've been doing it for decades.
Yep.
You know.
I agree. The Water Agency's done a great job all over. Well, anyway, we're coming up against our break. We do appreciate
it. There was a couple more questions I wanted to ask, but we're going to have to...
There was still a couple more questions I wanted to ask, Chris, but we'll have to, I guess, wait till
next week.
So I'll make a note of those, Chris.
No problem.
We miss you, and I hope you stay safe and hope your area is okay.
Oh, yes, and same to you.
All right. We'll catch you in a bit. To you next week.
Okay, take care.
All right.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take a little break from our sponsors. We'll be back here on KCAA, and stick around for more of the Water Boys. Thanks.
This is Brooke's yard, and Brooke loves spending time with her kids. What she doesn't love are the ugly bare spots in her lawn. That's why Brooke uses Scott's Easy Seed. Unlike seed alone, with proper care, Easy Seed's all-in-one growing solution grows grass anywhere. The first time, guaranteed. This is a Scott's Yard. Pick up Scott's Easy Seed today.
Are you looking for a place to buy your landscape and gardening items? Come visit us at Site One Landscape Supply. We offer a large and quality selection of irrigation, landscape, and outdoor living products such as Toro's water-efficient precision nozzles. Site One Landscape Supply has over 30 locations right here in Southern California, and we are the largest national wholesale distributor of landscape supplies in the United States. Site One's knowledgeable and friendly staff is equipped to help you with all your landscape, irrigation, and outdoor living projects. Whether you're redoing your backyard into a drought-tolerant garden or creating a water-efficient landscape for your client, Site One has everything you need, including the latest in water-saving technologies, drought-tolerant plants for your yard, irrigation supplies, fertilizer and weed control products, landscape accessories, hardscape products, outdoor lighting, and much, much more. Visit SiteOne.com to find a store near you, or stop by today. Site One. We are stronger together.
Well, welcome back to the Water Zone. Hope everybody's having a great afternoon. It's been nice here in California, so we're kind of easing into the show. We do have a guest, and what's going to be, I'm going to be outnumbered here because we have three Mikes. We've got Mr. Mike Barron, who I call Mikeypedia, but we have two other gentlemen named Mike, Mike Genza, if I pronounce it correctly, and Mike Cohen, and they're from a company called Magnation, and Mike Barron and I had the honor of meeting them a couple months ago in Las Vegas at an industry trade show, and they had a unique product, and we wanted them to come on and talk about it because it affects a whole bunch of different industries. This product that I'm going to let, I won't tell you what it is yet, I'll come on, but it goes across various markets such as agriculture, turf grass, industrial, landscape, residential, and even wellness, which is really an interesting topic. So I want to welcome the two Mikes to the show, and thanks for joining us today.
Rob and Mike. Thank you, guys. Really a pleasure being with you guys.
We appreciate that. Hey, can you tell, just for our listening audience, can you tell a little bit more about Magnation, how it started, what is it, and what do you do? And then we can go into some a little bit more in-depth about your products.
Sure. Magnation started in 2008 and started in California and started with basically trials in the valley, both in the Salinas area and Kern County. You know, we've been existing now for 10 years, and we've been manufacturing the products that go in line, and they basically restructure the water and break up the mineralization in the water, and help the flow, help infiltration, kind of convert irrigation, hard irrigation water into a more permeable, more productive water.
So does that your treatment or your process by which you maybe treat the water, I don't know if that's the right word to use for your technology, but it does something so that that water perhaps penetrates the ground more easily, more effectively, and actually can more accessible to the plant material. Is any of that part of that process?
Without giving away any of your trade secrets, can you tell a little bit about the technology at a 50,000-foot level?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everything I can tell you today, I'm Mike Jenza speaking, and I've learned from the farmers. You know, we probably have over 20,000 installations in the field, and the concept of rainwater came up with one of our farmers in Porterville, and he happens to be a physicist, and he said, what do you think the difference between rainwater and irrigation water is? I mean, we get pristine water out of the Sierra Mountains, and it comes into our orchard and puddles up, and it gets mixed with half an inch of rain, and it permeates a lot
right. Easier.
And
but also, doesn't the rain, when the rain comes down, it affects with the you know, falling from the sky with the different pressure and breaks things up? And
Yes. And well, his explanation was it goes through atmospheric magnetic field, and it gets the charge in it. And in fact, NASA has a great YouTube video of an anatomy of a droplet, water droplet, and how it moves, you know, and through the atmosphere and splits and spins. And so what we try to do is mimic that process with our devices that we manufacture, you know, put a geometric and a magnetic charge into the water so it doesn't need to be plugged in, doesn't need to be maintained, it doesn't need to be, it doesn't need any chemicals or anything. So, but that's what we're doing, is we're mimicking that process. And in agriculture, as you know, the puddling is an issue, runoff is an issue, evapotranspiration or percolation on sandy loam soils. And when you do this process on the water, you're unleashing the water molecule, because it's typically coming out of the ground. It's got bicarbonates, it's got mineral salts that tend to lock up the soils and make things more difficult on farmers. Like, for instance, in orchards, the idea of water productivity is that if you have stick tight issues on almonds, you shake the tree during harvest and you get most of the almonds off the tree, but you have some stick tights left and you have to send people to kind of, you know, pick those, and becomes a very costly issue. But when they install these units, they get better water infiltration, absorption, and nutrient uptake. So stress levels of trees or row crops is it's during July, August is goes down dramatically. Issues with spider mite issues, for instance, go away because mites tend to kind of come in when there's weakness in the field, you know, in the plant. And we've seen that over and over again with farmers, in the Midwest here, overseas with stadiums and ballparks and so on.
Mm-hmm. So this uses a specific technology. Can I get into a little bit of that, or like I said, I don't want to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have a patent on a product. We're working on two or three other patents right now. They're pending, I think I'm open to any questions you have.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'll keep it at 50,000.
You can always say, we'd rather not comment on that.
Visit our website. We're not trying to, get into that specific thing. But what's unique about your product, you can save approximately 20% in water consumption by having this technology. It can reduce chemical use anywhere from 10 to 50%. It also saves in energy consumption. And I saw some pictures you have, it's on your website, about the different crops, like tomatoes and some other things, where you can actually, of the same acreage or footage, you can actually boost production up to 30%, 10 to 30%. And there's no zero byproducts, which I think is, the world's looking for. In today's things, are you seeing more in your business, since you cover a wide variety of industries and things? Do you see the biggest or the one that, if you had to pick the one of the most value that this could bring, would it be the ag side? And then I want to ask you about the wellness, because that intrigues me as well.
Anywhere that water is being used, for instance, when you drive down I-5, you see all the signs about the water, how important water is, and so on. You know, without water, you can't grow. And but when you look at golf courses, they use a lot more water than a farm does. But we have one case that in British Columbia, Vancouver, that they've seen a 2.5 million gallon per month savings. That's approximately 80,000 gallons a night.
Mm-hmm.
Their salts have, leached out. They're not dealing with the same diseases that they were before. So, my heart's in the agriculture, because I like the people that are in that business, and I've been blessed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Cohn, he's more in the ball park side of things, and golf and sport fields and so on. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, a lot of the farming and even golf courses or even the landscape, they sometimes use fertigation systems. So yeah. if they do, I'm just asking the question. So in that kind of environment, would this be post-fertigation, after fertigation? Because what I'm asking basically is the fertigation portion going through your system, would that cause a problem?
Not at all. In fact, we have units on sprayer types, like, for instance, on orchards, they use the aeroblast sprayers in California. And, in golf courses, you got the Toro sprayers, or in the Midwest, they use the, John Deere sprayers, and in Europe, they have the Agrifac. And the quality of the droplets that come out of the water, if I'm answering your question, I mean, if you're spraying the water that's gone through our system, ideally you install the system after you inject your fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
You get more uniformity droplet size. You get less runoff. You have it impacts drift, because your uniformity of your droplets is a lot, uniform.
Right.
Your angles of spraying kind of widen up, and you don't have the runoff.
So you're saying your technology actually affects the geometric shape of the water droplet?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, because what happens, you know, when you say water, water is, we're not just talking H2O, we're talking H2O and all the total dissolved solids that are in there, and the gases that are trapped in those solids, like whether it's nitrates or sulfates, or in the city you have the chlorine, that they become an insulation for the water molecule. So that's why you get the runoffs, and because that water is not infiltrating, that's why, you know, you start using wetting agents to help that water you know, become more productive. And but what this process does is to help stimulate the electrons in the water, polarizes the minerals, breaks them up, and separates them. So, you know, I mean, I can tell you one of our water tests that we did with the customer did and sent it to a lab. Their TDS levels of 4,000 approximately came down to 3,500. The sodium went from 16 to 1,200. And the calcium went up from, was it 19 to 33 or something like that, and as well as the magnesium. So there was a good ratio of magnesium-calcium that came after the treatment. Most importantly, in that water test, the sodium absorption ratios dropped by 50%.
So does that mean that, you know, because salt buildup, salinity in soils, whether it's golf courses or agricultural sites, you know, that's becoming a bigger issue because, one, the water that becomes available seems to be a little more, you know, saline. And there's a lot of research in universities going on with, you know, the how inert or how well do plants do, you know, which plants do the best with high saline content in the water supply. So you're saying that the sodium atoms are still there. It's just that they don't create the problem that they would create if you didn't treat the water. Is that a correct interpretation?
What happens with sodium, it locks everything up. It collects everything onto itself, you know. And so when you're doing a water test, you show your sodium's up, then calcium's are down, and then you end up putting gypsum into the ground, you know, because of that. But when you break those, you shake those minerals apart and polarize them and separate them, then you actually see what you have in your water. There are some salts that you can solubilize in there. But, yeah, everything's in there, and it's necessary to have those things in there. That's why well water works a lot better, you know, in growing crop than, you know, city water or, you know, other types of waters. But, if that's answering your question.
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
So all these other things that you could find, such as mineral scale buildup, iron, bacteria, and all this stuff, that as it goes through your system, this helps break that down into a negligible or much less content. Does it change the temperature as it affects the molecules?
It does.
Okay.
It, very, very, you know, I mean, if you were doing a test on it, it would be negligible change, but it does make a difference on it. So
I've got a question for you. This might be getting into the technical weeds too much. So if it is, you can say, yeah, we probably don't get into that. But in agricultural applications, oftentimes farmers will have what we call coefficients. What's the plant factor? What's the plant factor terminology? But in ag, they're called... it's basically a number that identifies what percent of reference ET needs to be used to apply water. It gives you a way to calculate how much water your crop needs. And one of the things that saves water is obviously a good schedule, a schedule that replaces the lost moisture based upon yesterday's weather. You know, the hotter it is or the windier it is, that affects your schedule in terms of applying more water to replace what was lost. And at the end of the crop growing season, you look at, well, how much water did you use? Did you use 100% of ET, or did you use 80% of ET or 60% of ET as a way of measuring the effect, how effective your water management strategy was? And I'm just curious, the farmers that you are involved with, do they ever mention something like that to you, or are they more focused on just how many total gallons of water did I save?
Most farmers that I've been involved with, I think the water conservation aspect of it is takes a second or third priority for them, I think.
Oh, really?
I'll say that in a way where, let's say if they have an infiltration issue, then, you know, if the puddling issue or runoff or percolation problems, then, you know, the water savings is not, you know, doesn't come to mind at that point. You know, they want to just get the water in into the plant. And if you could help, you know, demonstrate that water getting in, that meaning not just getting into the plant, but as or the soil, but as well as the plant, you're going to see it in the quality of the plant and the yield of the plant. And just like the stick that issue or the spider mite problems, or, you know, like in the Midwest where they use center pivots there. Back in 2010, we did a trial in western Kansas where the farmer said, well, I'm going to see how this thing is going to help us out, so I'm going to put it in the middle of my towers. You know, he had a half-mile pivot, and he put it on the third tower in from the center. And then later we did some satellite imagery and kind of for vegetation pattern and so on. It was a night and day difference. And, you know, what you do with the water that you have, it's the question, really. And if you could improve its quality and its productivity, another example of, if you go out with hard water and try to wash your car with it, you're going to leave all the spotting on the car. But if those minerals are not sticking together, you won't see the spotting.
Can I ask another question? And this has to do with sports fields. The factors that drive the turf grass manager at a sports field, or maybe the superintendent, to want to use your product, is it also about the infiltration issue first and foremost, or is it more on the water saving side of the decision making process? From a marketing standpoint, I'm very curious as to if the parks and sports fields, those people kind of approach what your product can do, the benefits of your product, if they approach that the same way that farmers do.
Sure. I mean, everybody is a skeptic at first, right? Have to prove it to them. And that's why we have, sizes from, quarter inch to, and up. Because if they're using a three-quarter inch hose, we have devices that go on the hoses. And if they're, hand watering, they're going to notice the difference, how long they have to stand out there to get the water moisture into the ground. And so that's our way in. Or if they're washing their equipment that have, they have salt residues on them, they can see how they can or we have the same type of product we could install under a sprinkler head in a dry spot or a hydrophobic area where, you know, you take a green and install, you know, a couple of units under one under each sprinkler, and you could see after a week that whole environment changes. You know, it becomes.
You can actually see a difference in a week's worth of watering that quickly?
Yes. If you talk to some of the superintendents that we, you know, in one case, there's a superintendent on the golf course for 25 years. He says, I asked him the same question. I said, you know, this is a common question. You can actually see it. How long would it take you to see it? He said, you could see it. If your eyes are trained, if you're on the field doing things, you could see it within the first 30 seconds. In fact,
wow.
when we're at the World Ag Expo, one of the things that I do is I treat a little Dixie cup of water with our device and one without, and I just dump them on the ground. You know, there's the sand underneath, so, you know, it's bare ground. So you could see which one gets in and doesn't bubble up. It doesn't have that surface tension on it.
And I would assume the farmers are looking for a couple things. One, you know, obviously conservation of water. Well, let me restate
well,
that.
Use
less water, but get more yields.
Yes.
And I'm not a farm expert, but I know the science of farming from when I was born to today is absolutely totally different. And I'm assuming the bigger farms or the more sophisticated farms use, as Mike said, ET information. But I would also assume they probably would use some sort of soil moisture sensors, because I always believe that's a complete feedback system where the ET ET tells you when you need to water, but the soil moisture tells how much you got to water. And
sure.
do you find on the farming side that that's a big deal to them, and or am I off that they want to increase the yield with less water, or, you know, getting that? Is that a major thing to them?
I think, you know, contrary to, you know, what people think of who farmers are, I think farmers are way ahead of the game, you know, they can eyeball it, even, you know, some the guys that know it, you know, it's important for them, but again, I think troubleshooting is the most important. You know, it's the signs of what the water is not doing is for me is the important thing to notice.
Right.
I would think farmers are, as you mentioned earlier, in terms of when they have puddling or they are they struggling with getting the water to infiltrate, so that the crops can get the adequate amount of moisture that they need, that, you know, like solving their problem, their biggest problem, if you can do that with your technology, seems to me that would be very attractive to the farmer.
I know on your website, I was just showing Mike here, all the different tests and things that you've done for all different areas. And it's amazing to see the big difference between, I'm looking here at the one on the turf grass comparison. On what? That's pretty substantial. So,
yeah. What is that website, by the way? Just
yeah.
So folks might be interested in looking
sure.
at some of that information.
It's rainlikewater.com.
Oh, that's good.
Simple.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as turf, you know, you said how long does it take? You know, if you're working on an orchard, let's say if you're have a unit on an orchard versus a turf field, you can see the results a lot quicker on a turf field. I mean, Tulare Golf Course, they just did a trial. I'd be happy to send you that some of the pictures that came in from one of our dealers in the area, that they had a 12-day early germination that was mind-boggling for a lot of us, you know, that bent grass, you know, germinated quicker, and
combine that technology with Pearl's Premium, you got one heck of a system.
Yeah,
it is. It's sometimes, you know, it sounds like too good to be true. And I look around. I've been at it for 10 years, and I as the results keep coming in. I mean, you know, when you're talking about health aspects, I mean, we have organic dairy guys that they call in. They say their somatic cell count in the milk went down, you know, by from 400,000 to 30,000.
Just for our audience, somatic cell count, can you kind of explain that?
I had to look it up when I heard it first, but
well, we can tell our audience to do that too. So I don't mean to put you on the spot.
It's like when I asked my mama how to spell the word, she says, "Look it up in the dictionary." I said, "If I knew how to spell it, I wouldn't need the dictionary." So
yeah, right. Kind of same thing. So I did the same thing. Somatic. I had to. But it's the bacteria count that has to be under a certain number to be approved. For the milk to be, approved for consumption, if that answers it.
So how does this fall into the wellness? Because I'm interested in that as well.
Well, hydration, number one. Most inflammation is due to lack of hydration. Most of the most diseases are waterborne diseases. Most issues that we have are waterborne. Water related. So if you could improve your water, I mean, you can tackle the issue a lot quicker and faster. So hydration and nutrient uptake. So if you could convert those minerals into electrolytes, that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Your body's going to absorb them easier. We have these units in poultry farms where, chickens are healthier. They're less stressed in the heat. Same thing with livestock. Goats have, some goats have arthritis in their front knees, and when they drink this water after a while, that goes away. This is direct Amish testimonial.
So when you see these ads on television for the water purifiers for your home, I won't mention the brands, it doesn't matter, but then they say, oh, we have zero TDCs and all of that stuff. And there's also water agencies throughout the country that add fluoride to the water.
Right. And chlorine.
And chlorine, yeah.
Or chloramines.
Yeah. What does that do to the water with all this other chemicals added in?
Sure. Well, what it does to gases, like chlorine, what chlorine does, this is something I learned from a NASA scientist as a he was a water expert. These are chlorines insulate the water molecule. And that's why, over time, you could see it in some of these hot tubs that they run, throw in chlorines, but tiles are still turning yellow and grout is getting, picking up things. So on one hand, you're keeping the bacteria out, but on the other hand, you're also consuming it. Now, I have a pocket unit that I use whenever I buy a cup of coffee. I run my coffee through it. It reduces its acidity. It degasses. It kind of takes out the bubbles out of it, all the chlorines that the coffee comes with.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you can add physics to what you're drinking, even wine and other things, you don't have to deal with the sulfites.
Can this be used in a pool application?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you mean in a pool application to replace chlorination, or do you mean?
Or what do you do?
To reduce the amount of chlorines that you would need and have energy in the water. Odor, actually, it eliminates odor, like salt, hydrogen sulfide has that rotten egg smell. Chlorine, is very, smells. And so you could eliminate that.
I know in the above, I don't have an above ground pool. I have in-ground spas at my house. And I know when people who have the above ground, you know, the separate units, they sell things to pour into it because you get all the oils from people and everything else that's in that water. And if you recycle these through the pumps, what would that help getting rid of that, or does it, what does it do?
Well, it, first of all, when you put a unit like this on the exit of the pump, I have one on post my pump and under recirculating, you know, as it goes, mm-hmm. comes back, so it gets treated twice, you know, advantages of being in the business. But it also impacts the way the pump runs. I mean, when we install these units, let's say for farmers, if they're running, if they have a 12-inch line and they're running 2,000 gallons a minute through their system, you know, at 40, 50 PSI, as soon as they put the unit on, their GPMs goes up to 2,400 GPMs.
Hmm.
And they're blown away by it. They say, that's the first sign of return on investment.
Right.
You know, and so they start looking at other things and get curious about, you know, their infiltration, the amount of gypsum they use, or the stress levels of the trees or what have you.
Right.
But as far as health, I mean, we have a tabletop unit. You know, we have I have small kids, and so does Mike, and everything we drink, everything they drink, whether it's milk, juice, apple juice, water, it's treated with this, these devices, and it's we're neck and committed with it. So we believe in the product, and
absolutely.
The beauty about it is this technology's been around. We're not the we're the Johnny come latelys in it, but it's been around a long time. What we're doing is that we're trying to make a product that people can afford and try, you know, because we're not just selling the 12-inch, you know, $10,000 units, but we're selling, you know, the $150, $200 units so people can afford them.
Right.
You see what it does for them.
Now, is there any interchangeable parts, or once the water goes through this thing, and I won't go into the deep technical stuff because I don't want to do that. I don't want to give secrets away for your products, but so when the water goes through this, does anything inside that pathway have to be changed, cleaned, done once it's installed, or no?
No. Okay. This is basically like a static mixer,
mm-hmm.
magnetic static mixer. So it the energy itself spins the water because the way the magnetic field is designed on these units, it helps. With that pressure of the water comes through, there are several laws of physics that come into play. Lorentz force, the Venturi, atomization, and a lot of different things with the vortex and
right.
That basically agitate that water and kind of liven it up, just like a river coming out of the mountain. So
right. Have you done anything? I know you call it the wellness. Have you done anything with hospitals, for example?
We have some installations in hospitals, but it's selling this product or marketing it to the health industry hasn't been our number one target. Agriculture has been heavy water users. You know, guys that are using. Whether greenhouses and,
mm-hmm.
Is
there any regulatory? Is there any regulatory things that go with this? Like, does it have to be EPA?
No.
No electronics. So I mean, it's no UL or any of that. So,
no, okay. Not at all.
All right. So they can, because we're up against the news break here for NBC. But so if they want to find more about you, they can go to
Rain like water.
I'm sorry, I had it backwards here. I feel like I'm dyslexic today. But no, we appreciate you coming on the show today. And